This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFK. If you're not already a member, consider joining with us and keep free speech alive.
Ruling the world right here every Wednesday afternoon, 3:30 to 4 p.m. Pacific time, coast to coast and around the globe, right here on KPFK in beautiful Los Angeles, 90.7 FM in L.A., 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, 93.7 FM in San Diego, 99.5 in Ridgecrest and China Lake, and of course, coast to coast and around the globe on KPFK.org. Congratulations. I was going to say congratulations. Good afternoon. That's what I mean to say. Brad Friedman here, your friendly citizen investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow, once again occupying the airwaves. They've dragged me out from behind bradblog.com, and so what I meant to say was congratulations for finding me. Glad to have you join us this afternoon. We're going to be joined momentarily by Will Bunch from the Philadelphia Daily News to discuss media coverage of Occupy Wall Street at what seems to be a critical moment in the movement. But before we do that, I want to take care of some business. It's been, of course, 1 week since the raid at Los Angeles City Hall of the peaceful occupiers there, and we've learned quite a bit since then about those who were detained and the conditions under which they were held. Not that the media has been reporting on much of it, frankly. It's been rather amazing. If you talk to the folks who were released in the days following the raid, where they were held for some of them 3 days, some of them are still in jail now, by the way. But what was extraordinary is that constitutional rights were withheld from these folks. Many of them talk about never having been read their Miranda rights. They were pulled off the sidewalks after being told that they would not be arrested if they were on the sidewalks. Pulled off the sidewalks, arrested, shackled, kept on buses for up to 8 or 9 hours. They were given no food, no water. They were forced to urinate on themselves in L.A. County Sheriff buses on that night. So a lot of the folks in the media, including myself, had reported that the LAPD handled themselves fairly well during that actual raid. No, they didn't break out the pepper spray or the tear gas. However, they did use some rubber bullets on demonstrators. And then the way they were held in the ensuing days after those arrests, they weren't just cited and released as per state law concerning misdemeanors like this. They were held for 3 days. They were not given access to attorneys, to medical care as needed. They were held on outrageous $5,000 bails. And the city attorney even tried unsuccessfully, thanks to the courts in this case, to include a provision of the release of the demonstrators when they finally were released days later, a provision that would keep them from being able to return to City Hall. Unbelievable, outrageous. So any goodwill, as far as I'm concerned, that Mayor Villaraigosa and the LAPD might have earned that night, they have lost in the days since, given the outrageous way they have treated the detainees in the days following that arrest. It was absolutely appalling. We've been covering it at bradblog.com. We're going to have more coverage of that in the days ahead. So tune in, because that's what really went on at Occupy LA. And it is not being reported in the media adequately, as far as I can see. So, more on that ahead. Also, last week, we had citizen journalists and video streamers Okfeshow, otherwise known as Spencer Mills, is his real name, as well as Occupy Freedom LA, who likes to be known as simply Freedom. They joined me last week on this show to discuss their all-night coverage from the night before as they were web-streaming what was actually going on the ground out there at City Hall in Los Angeles. And we discussed the moment where an LAPD officer pointed a weapon straight at Okfeshow. Spencer Mills, and how Spencer took him to task for it, and that was in the middle of the night as this was all going down. I wasn't able to find the audio for that moment at the time, but I've now been able to find it thanks to Russian television, who actually ran this moment where they show this LAPD officer, his name is Escamilla, pointing this gun at Mills, a journalist, on the night of that raid. I haven't seen it anywhere in the U.S. media. Russian television had it. And here's some of the audio from what happened that night. You'll hear Okfeshow take the officer to task. You'll hear the crowd who was with him start chanting, guns down, guns down. I've shortened that a little bit so you can get the idea. But here was Okfeshow, journalist, Spencer Mills, standing up to the LAPD and this officer, Escamilla, who is seen pointing a gun straight at a peaceful citizen journalist.
Escamilla is pointing his weapon at protesters. That's not necessary. You just pointed your weapon right at me. That's not necessary. That's not necessary. I am worried about it because it's against procedure and it's against code. You're not supposed to do it. So keep your finger off the trigger, please. Thank you. Don't point your weapon at me. It's against procedure and it's against code. I'm a journalist. I'm allowed to be here.
Guns down! Guns down! Guns down! Guns down!
Again, his name is Escamilla. Escamilla. I believe he just broke procedure.
That was 1 week ago as LAPD officer Escamilla was seen pointing his gun at a citizen journalist, Spencer Mills, better known as Okfeshow. He's based up in Oakland, and he came down to L.A. to cover the raid on Occupy L.A. last week. I've talked to Mills, and he he actually has now filed a complaint with the LAPD, so hopefully we'll learn more about it in the coming weeks. I tried to get comment from LAPD if that was appropriate procedure, and they have yet to respond to my queries. All right, well, last night in San Francisco, just after 1 a.m., police, again, up in the Bay Area, raided the peaceful demonstrators there in the middle of the night, just after 1 a.m. They were given 5 minutes notice before hundreds of tents were rounded up by the police. Demonstrators were either arrested or sent into the cold, dark night. And once again, we had the mayor up there, Mayor Ed Lee, citing for the reason for this raid, citing health reasons again for doing so. All the mayors have done this. It's because it's for their health that we are going in the middle of the night and sending these people out into the streets with nowhere else to go often, or sending them to jail. In coverage of the raid in San Francisco last night, I was scouring the papers trying to get a sense of how they were covering it this morning. The only real coverage that I could find concerning the actual from the protesters, from the demonstrators' point of view, was this snippet in an AP article. The AP article was carried in a lot of places, but only the Washington Post really seemed to have this full snippet quoting this occupier, Jack Martin. I'll just read you these quick sentences. Jack Martin of San Francisco said he was trying to leave the plaza when he was zip-tied, taken to a police station, cited, and released. Officers trashed his tent and belongings, he said. Everything I owned is gone, said Martin, who's 51, as tears welled up in his eyes. My medicine, my paper for my Social Security. He yelled at a line of officers blocking the plaza, quote, I was trying to get out of your way, unquote. Martin said he lost his job as a building manager and had moved into a hostel until about 5 weeks ago when he ran out of money. Asked what he planned to do next, he replied, quote, Occupy, 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 occupy. Indeed. Good luck finding that account of what happened in San Francisco last night. Good luck finding accounts from the demonstrators themselves as far as what is going on at these occupations around the country. To discuss the media coverage of this Occupy movement at what my next guest argues is a key moment in the occupation movement in the United States of America, I'm joined now by Will Bunch, from Philadelphia Daily News columnist, blogger at the Attitude blog that you can find over at philly.com. He's also the author of The Backlash, Right-Wing Radicals, High-Def Hucksters, and Paranoid Politics in the Age of Obama. And now he's the author of October 1, 2011, The Battle of the Brooklyn Bridge, an ebook that is now available that you can get over at Amazon. I think it's only about 99 cents over at Kindle. For your Kindle and for your smart device, covering the outrageous battle that took place in October when New York City police rounded up occupiers on the Brooklyn Bridge. Will Bunch joins me now. Hey, Will, welcome, sir, to KPFK.
Hey, Brad, thanks so much for having me on. You're right, by the way, it's 99 cents for the 99%. So
smartly done.
Gimmick. Yeah.
Was that on purpose?
Sort of.
Okay. I'll let it slide. But, you know, this is important, frankly, because books like this, these sort of e-books, these quick books that come out, the citizen media that's been covering these raids and so forth live, this seems to me to be telling the story of what is really going on with Occupy Wall Street in a way that the mainstream media either doesn't seem capable of doing or simply doesn't want to do. You wrote a column on Sunday on your Attitude blog at Philadelphia Daily News saying that, the first sentence, in 30 years of reporting, I've never covered a story quite like Occupy Wall Street. And you go on to be very critical of your own paper about their coverage. Before we get to your criticism of your paper and others, in 30 years of reporting, you've never covered a story like Occupy Wall Street. How is it different?
Well, I think a couple things. I mean, just the spontaneity of it. Certainly, the leaderless. I mean, journalists are just obsessed with hierarchies. It's like the old Martian joke: "Take me to your leader." I mean, that's basically the first question any journalist is usually going to ask when they show up in an event.
Mm-hmm.
And just the way that this movement sprung up so quickly and with so little warning and so few of the bells and whistles that journalists are used to make their jobs easier,
mm-hmm.
It was a real challenge for people. You know, I mean, the reason I got involved in doing the Battle of the Brooklyn Bridge in this ebook is because really from day one I thought the media coverage was lacking, and one of the biggest flaws I thought was that the protesters just weren't being portrayed as the human beings that they were. I mean, you mentioned something about whether, journalism was adequate or up to the task of covering the protests. In a way, I'd say not, because too many people went down there real quick just trying to get sound bites or trying to get quotes.
Mm-hmm.
And the movement is just something you can't really easily distill in quotes. I mean, to me, the movement, at least what fascinates me as a journalist anyway, is the story of what brought people to this point. You know, what's going on in America that caused you to give up whatever you were doing a month ago and come here and live in a tent or live in a sleeping bag or worse,
yeah.
And march on banks and do these other things you're doing. What's going on? What have you experienced in America, you know, that has caused you to take this radical step? And it's an amazing story. I mean, the stories of the people that I talked to at Zuccotti Park were amazing, and obviously the stories of some of the people I've met here in Philadelphia, where I'm based and where we had a very active Occupy Philadelphia group, are amazing. And to me, I mean, I guess, you know, that was kind of the core of my media. But my initial media criticism was in the first week or two that I couldn't believe the extent that it wasn't being covered at all. I mean, obviously, that's changed, but now the question is, is not whether the media covers it, because it does. But now the question has become, how does the media cover it?
How do they cover it? And you had pointed out that the Philadelphia Daily News, I'm speaking with Will Bunch, by the way, columnist, blogger from Philadelphia Daily News, you pointed out that your paper back on, when was this, early October?
Early October, yeah, right after the Brooklyn Bridge arrest, in fact, a couple days after that.
Right, terrific.
October 4th.
Yeah, cover story, huge banner headlines, it's about time, waves of outrage, 3 years after Wall Street collapsed. It shows one of the occupiers there with a 99% scarf around her neck. They seemed to be applauding the movement for finally showing up. And then what was it, a month or two later, and all of a sudden they're calling it stain on the city? What happened?
Yeah, another front page, they called it a stain on the city, yeah.
What happened between It's About Time and stain on the city? Did it really become a stain on the city, or was it, did the paper feel
no,
that
I,
it
no,
was
I think, no, I don't believe it became, I mean, that's, you know, I think in my piece I called that headline cringeworthy.
Yeah.
Probably polite, me being polite and calling it cringeworthy.
I think you were, yes.
Yeah, well, I do work here. So.
for now, well.
They do still pay me every
all
week.
All right, so. For now.
but I mean, well, first of all, I mean, the one thing I want to make clear is, you know, I mean, I love the Daily News. I mean, we used to call ourselves the People Paper. For whatever reason, we changed everything to the People's Paper, which is, I guess, trying to even emphasize that aspect even more. And much of the time, we live up to that. You know, we do a good job. You know, we've always tried to cover the issues of the middle class and the working class, and traditionally, we've usually done a pretty good job with that. And also, we're much less uptight than no pun intended, 99% of the newspapers in America. I mean, we really encourage reporters to you know, be opinionated and be out there and write boldly, and they've certainly encouraged me and helped me in that goal. And these are pretty good. And that first headline, the It's About Time headline, kind of reflected all those qualities in the paper, you know, that we weren't just going to say, hey, there's a protest going on. We're going to show some, you know, attitude is the name of my blog.
Yeah.
Show some enthusiasm about it, right?
Yeah.
And so the question is, I mean, what happened over the course of a month? I think, you know, I think they just got worn down. I think, you know, I mean, you have to look at what really happened and then how it got spun. I mean, what really happened is Philadelphia, like a lot of big cities here in the Rust Belt, has a big homeless problem.
Mm-hmm.
And both when I say that, I mean the problem both in there's too many homeless people, then more homeless people, any homeless people person is something you don't want to see, and then there's a lot of them, number one. And then the other problem is not the problem of the people, but the problem of the city and other agencies and really adequately addressing their needs. And so when the Occupy movement came along, and we've seen this in almost every city that had a large Occupy encampment, you saw a lot of homeless people gravitating towards these encampments for a variety of reasons.
Which you point out in your article that you say homeless people, one of the things that you've learned through this coverage is homeless people should be covered as people, not as homeless, because that allows people to that regards them as somewhat like three-fifths of a citizen when you call them homeless rather than people, human beings like that fellow I read.
Particularly, I mean, here's the thing, and I mean, this is what we said in the front page, and this was a struggle. I mean, I struggled myself as a writer. It is a complicated issue, but, you know, there became this sense, you know, a month or two into the protests that, and you may have seen this out in L.A. where you are or wherever else, but the sense that the homeless have overwhelmed the Occupy movement. And when you think we take a step back and first you say, they started protesting and then more and more homeless people came over and it was kind of like this organism or something. And eventually the homeless people became in Philadelphia, the homeless may have been at the end more than half of the people at the encampment.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, well, is that the homeless overwhelming the movement? First of all, how could the homeless overwhelm a movement of the 99%? I mean, the homeless are, as I wrote in the piece, they're really the epitome of the 99%.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they're the people, they tend to be the people who've suffered the most, either, you know, and people are homeless, obviously, we all know, for a variety of reasons. Some of them are economic, some of them are people who, you know, we had white collar jobs a couple months ago and just now have nowhere else to go.
Well, I read the story from AP that fella, Jack Martin, 51 years old, he was a building manager. He lost his job, ran out of money, couldn't stay in the hostel anymore. And so he came out to the occupation in San Francisco. And yes, it was like that in LA when all of a sudden the media started saying, oh, it's become a magnet for homeless people. Like that was a bad thing that we were, you know, sheltering, feeding, helping these people. People who have been victims of this mess.
I mean, it was a real problem, and it was a very diverse population. But I mean, you know, if somebody like this 51-year-old building manager that you just mentioned isn't somebody who should be protesting what's going on in this country, who is?
Who should?
But the other thing, and the other point I wanted to make part of my piece was kind of advice for, you know, my thoughts for journalists and journalism going forward is, now that this has happened, what we really should be doing is taking a look back and saying, why was this the best option for homeless individuals? You know, why we're supposed to have a system in place to, trying to address the homeless population, with shelters or other programs. And yet, instead of going to gravitating towards those programs that we allegedly had in place and were taking care of the problem, instead they go to this new thing that sprung up that, you know, I mean, my sense, and maybe it played out differently in different cities, my sense is the people who started the Occupy encampments, one of their first thoughts wasn't, oh, we're also going to make this a place for servicing homeless people. That's something that developed as it went along, you know. And so even though that wasn't part of the plan, that happened, and it's like, why? What is it that these camps were offering homeless people that they aren't getting in the system? And how, looking at that, how do we change the system so that we can come up with a new system that is somewhere in a different place, you know, that's maybe not the Occupy encampment, but it's not the city shelters that aren't working either, but is a place where homeless people can feel empowered again, you know, can feel part of the community. Because there were a lot of good stories involving homeless people who did feel empowered by the Occupy, or have, because some of them are still in it, obviously, have felt empowered by the Occupy movement. So that's something, that's not a negative. I mean, that's something to build on.
It seems like an opportunity. I mean, it seems like you could go down to these occupations and, you know, everywhere you could throw a stick, you'd find a compelling story. Do you think, I'm speaking with Will Bunch of Philadelphia Daily News. You're listening to Brad Friedman on KPFK. Do you feel that the change in the attitude that occurred at your paper, such that it did from the cover story, it's about time, to cover story a month or so later, stain on the city, did that have anything to do with the occupation actually coming to Philadelphia, whereas when they were originally writing, it was all taking place down there in New York City?
That's a good point. Maybe a little bit. I mean, what happened in Philadelphia, I think, I mean, there became a tipping point where people who had been homeless before September 17th, you know, became as much as half or more of the camp in Philadelphia. And, all kinds of things happened as a consequence of that. I mean, with that many people, there were a couple unfortunate incidents, although the one that really got the most attention and it was kind of the tipping point and kept, after it was reported, kept getting brought up over and over again, was that there was an allegation of a rape inside one of the tents. And, the funny thing, and this was just cited again and again in the coverage. Interestingly, as far as I know, nobody's been charged in that incident yet. And, it may not even have been I'm not saying that, you know, with that many people in that situation and those circumstances, that there was never a crime committed. I'm sure things happened that were unfortunate or whatever. But
there's a fixation on that.
Exactly. That's my point, too. Yeah. These isolated incidents became the dominant narrative to the real narrative of what was going on.
Isolated incidents and made up incidents. Andrew Breitbart's ridiculous websites were claiming that there was a murder at Occupy Savannah, a murder that never happened at Occupy Savannah, had nothing to do with Occupy Savannah. But they repeated this nonsense over and over again. We expect that from the bad guys, so to speak, you know, who wish to discredit the movement. But from the media, I would think we would Well, I was going to say we would expect more, but maybe we should know better than that as well at this point. Now we have
as a lot of the urban newspapers have downsized so considerably over the last few years. Crime has just become, coverage of crime has just become a fallback for big city papers, right? And one of the reasons for that, and it's not that crime rates are actually going down, oddly enough, but the reason for that is crime is actually easier to cover. You know, you have a police department.
Sure.
They come out several times a day. I forget where I read this, but I just thought this was a really insightful point, is unlike more complicated stories, you don't get both sides. You don't have to spend a lot of time getting both sides of a crime story. When the police say something happened, you know, the newspaper writes it happened, you don't go out and try and get the criminal side of it.
Exactly. And that's exactly what happened out here in Los Angeles with these hundreds of folks who were arrested. Well, I've only got a minute or so left here. I want to hit one important point that you brought up, that you write, when journalists weren't paying attention, our police forces became small armies and limits on free expression became way too onerous in the national fog after 9/11 with millions of dollars doled out on a frenzy of Homeland Security. America militarized its urban police forces with few questions asked by media watchdogs. Do you find them asking any more questions about that as we're seeing these same militarized stormtroopers really in city after city, or is this something now that the media just expects as the new normal?
Well, I've seen it covered actually fairly well in a couple, I guess what you would call large national venues.
Mm-hmm.
One is the Huffington Post, another one. The New York Times actually had a pretty good piece in its Sunday op-ed section this week. And maybe that's something that's going to trickle down to some of the middle-sized papers like in a place like Philadelphia or a paper like the LA Times or something like that. But for now, I think the thing that really bothered me about that was, people are protesting in a park, or they're in a situation like the situation at UC Davis.
Mm-hmm.
People are on a pathway and their arms are locked, and they're surrounded by these police, in these riot helmets with all kinds of, fancy gear, looking like they're, dealing with an alien space invasion instead of a bunch of, peacefully chanting protesters. And why? And this is considered normal? Why?
It is considered normal, and they seem to be taking whatever the police tell them and reporting it as is, as they did up in Oakland, as they did at UC Davis, whatever the police chief says, despite the fact that we've got citizens and even non-citizen media covering this stuff with videotape that puts a lie to much of what these police officials are saying. We can see it with our own eyes.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many questions in L.A., the bail, the people in jail for 2 days. I mean, somebody's got to keep digging on that.
Well, and that's Oakland. They lied about the tear gas. Same in UC Davis. Anyway, I got to run. I got to get out. Check out Will Bunch over at the Attitude blog at Philly.com. That's Philadelphia Daily News. And get his new ebook, October 1, 2011, The Battle of the Brooklyn Bridge. Thanks, Will. Always great to talk to you, my friend.
All right, Brad, same here. I really appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. All right, we'll talk to you again next week on the broadcast. Same Brad time, same Brad channel, right here on KPFK Pacifica. Until then, we'll see you on Twitter via the Brad Blog or at bradblog.com.